Hello, and welcome to this edition of EMS Now Up Close. I am Eric Miskell with EMS Now, and I get to once again speak with David Schild, of the executive director for the PCBAA. It's easier to say that than the whole words, which is, of course, a Printed Circuit Board Association of America. David, it's always good to get updates from you because you're living in or working in an ever-changing environment there.
Yeah, it's been a dynamic year. Thanks for having me, Eric.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And let's do that. What I want to do is kind of look back at the year, say, sure. Talk about some of the highlights, what the developments, what has happened, and then let's look forward to kind of some of the challenges and what's on the agenda in 2024. So let me just turn it over to you. Tell us, you know, accomplishments from 2023 as you look back. What are you, what's noteworthy?
It's hard to believe that we're already coming to the end of 2023, but I see, you know, people handing out candy canes and I see snowflakes starting to fall. And I know that we're already getting ready to have conversations about 2024. It's really been a tremendous year for our industry, both in terms of economic development as well as legislative progress. I think that the winds of reshoring, friendshoring, economic and national security policy being a top issue, those winds continue to blow very, very strongly, right? August was the 1 year anniversary of the CHIPS Act, a bill that by all accounts is going to be with us, you know, probably for about a decade. That $52 billion that the government is investing in semiconductor production, by all accounts, is going to lead to at least $450 billion in private money coming off the sidelines. It really is, we think, a good template for the way that our government can bring critical microelectronics technologies back home. And if you look at where we as an industry have gone in the last 11 months, let's say, there's a lot of metrics that I think are worth talking about. The first one is membership. Just as an organization, we started out with 5 members, where we just passed 47 members last week. So, you know, we're approaching 10x from our founding, which was about 30 months ago. And the reason that people throughout the value chain, and I'm talking about board manufacturers, I'm talking about critical material suppliers, I'm talking about assemblers, I'm talking about specialty chemical manufacturers, raw material suppliers, the reason they continue to join the team is because they all see the benefits upstream or downstream of building more of these critical technologies in the United States. They look at the contraction, right? 2,200 board shops in the year 2000, 150 board shops today, 30% of global market share in the year 2000, 4% of global market share today. They look at those statistics, they are concerned. Many of them have watched this happen and they think it's great that the industry is organized and pushing back and pushing forward in terms of legislative policy fixes. By way of what the government has done, it has been a very busy year. In the spring, we had the invocation of the Defense Production Act by the president. And this was really so critical because it's the White House saying microelectronics, specifically printed circuit boards and IC substrates, are a critical national security technology, frees up the Pentagon, frees up the federal government to drop red tape, to buy faster, to put R&D investments forward faster. The second part of that invocation is the need for funding. And we continue to push very hard with our partners at IPC to see that the DPAI, the Defense Production Act investment account at the Pentagon, is actually funded. If you think of the DPA as a hunting license, now we've got to put ammunition in, right? And those are the dollars that Congress appropriates. Unfortunately, we saw some cuts in the DPA this year, which we as part of our coalition are working to put back. But it can't be overstated how important it is for the president to say, we've got to make more of this at home officially and to stamp that designation under the Defense Production Act. The other thing that happened in the late spring was the reintroduction of the Protecting Circuit Boards and Substrates Act, or PCBs Act. That bill, as we've talked about, provides grants and tax credits for purchasers to incentivize capacity building, to make it possible to hire new workers, build new facilities, right? But also to say to our customers, there's a Buy America tax credit here that makes us competitive with boards sourced in Asia, for example. And that was really, really important. The third thing, and it's kind of buried in a policy document, but it's equally important, is we're just on the cusp of the passage of the National Defense Authorization Act. This is the bill that tells the Pentagon every year how to run its operations. And the NDAA, which you always see the Congress pass, even if it's going to keep the government open with a continuing resolution or omnibus funding bill, is probably set to go to the president's desk next week or the following. We're going to get out of here before the end of the year with a signed NDAA. That bill contains a very critical provision that says to the Pentagon, by 2027, you need to have a plan to get microelectronics from restricted countries out of your commercial off-the-shelf supply chain. Your COTS supply chain is full of things that come from places that we can't depend on, we can't rely on, we shouldn't rely on in times of conflict. And so we think that the Pentagon's audit, their plan to look inside that COTS supply chain, which will happen now in just a couple of years, is very important. But every year we've got to keep that provision in the bill. We've got to sort of hold the Pentagon's feet to the fire and say, while your ITAR restrictions do a great job, controlling some of your critical defense technologies, that dual use and commercial off the shelf technology, it's kind of a way for restricted technologies to go under the fence, as it were. And so that language is equally important. So big policy achievements throughout the year, good association growth. And then I think you and I are going to talk also about some of the recent economic investments as well by industry and by government.
Yeah. And let's get to that, actually. Well, here, quick comment too. First of all, congrats. That's a lot of hard effort and a lot of advancement that has happened this year.
Thank you.
Jumping, from what was it, 5 to 47 now, testament to your efforts and to what PCBAA is doing. And of course, we always encourage people to join and participate. And they don't just have to be, to clarify too, they don't just have to be fabs, they don't have to be the substrate manufacturer. It can be manufacturing companies as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as I said, the diversity of our base, I think, is important. It's certainly more than just board shops who see the advantage of PCB and substrate makers thriving in the United States. Any number of folks supplying raw materials, especially chemicals, any number of folks buying from or supplying to those companies, they see the contraction. They want to reverse it. It hits their bottom line. And I think it also hits their sense of why we need to have a secure and resilient supply chain.
Yeah. So all you manufacturers who are watching and who especially are building within kind of the restricted kind of sectors, you know, pay attention and maybe reach out and get involved here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's get to the business pie, because this I find, you know, it could never, we've talked about this before. It can't be just government and it wouldn't be just industry. It has to be that the private public kind of cooperation that makes it, that is going to achieve success here. Calumet and TTM.
Yes. It's really important to remember that our industry isn't just waiting for government handouts. We are stepping up with our own dollars to invest and to innovate and to show that this is a dynamic industry, not simply a legacy industry resting on its laurels. And so you can start with Calumet Electronics in Calumet, Michigan, which announced a partnership with the Michigan Economic Development Corporation to expand their capacity to produce organic substrates, right? Tens of millions of dollars being invested both by Calumet and the state to expand that capacity. It's really, 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 really critical. And don't let me forget, I've got some other Calumet good news that's breaking. But secondly, TTM in Syracuse, New York, announcing plans for a greenfield manufacturing facility, over $100 million investment, hundreds of jobs coming to Syracuse so that they can expand domestic production of ultra HDI PCBs, right? The kinds that are so critical for national security applications. So a much bigger facility, much more capacity, many more jobs coming to Syracuse, New York. And I know a partnership with the state of New York is present there. You see our industry sinking private money, private capital into expanding capacity, into staying on the bleeding edge of technology. And then you also see the government stepping up. I mentioned the MEDC in Michigan. I should also mention that the Pentagon recently awarded almost $40 million out of that DPA account we discussed earlier to Calumet, right, for more advanced PCB technologies for specific national security applications. The thing that the Pentagon does when it looks to the semiconductor industry, when it looks to our industry producing boards and substrates, is it says, what do the national defense systems of the future, things that operate in very dynamic, very high consequence environments, what kind of microelectronics do they need? Do we have a domestic capacity to manufacture those? Because of course, in time of war, in time of conflict, we can't be dependent on foreign sourcing for those technologies. So the $40 million award to Calumet, and congratulations to that team for being so innovative and for offering the Pentagon a solution that they needed, is an example of what that account and that designation is designed to do. Now, I would argue that is a drop in the bucket. That is just a step in the right direction. These investments by states, these limited investments by the Pentagon, in my view, Eric, they underscore the need for a bigger, broader policy, right? What the PCBs Act really represents. billions, not millions of dollars in grants available for capital expenditures and improvements, and that tax credit provision for so many American companies, for so many global manufacturing companies, I should say, there is a desire to diversify their supply chains. There is a desire to source more locally and to not have a repeat of what we saw during the COVID-19 pandemic, where we're waiting on container ships. We're waiting on regions of the world that have been effectively shut down. We don't want to have empty store shelves. We don't want to have empty lots at car dealerships. We don't want to wait on critical infrastructure, on critical medical, on critical defense technologies. So we've got to build more at home. We've got to have a more diverse portfolio. That's where billions, not millions, really make a difference. And that's where significant tax credits for purchasers we think are important. So great initial steps here. But what it says to me as an advocate is it underscores the need for larger investments. We're willing to step up. The government is willing to make some offers and some entrees as well. But there's got to be more work to truly change the way the wind is blowing.
You know, and I feel compelled to mention too the example of Schweitzer. Met them through your introduction. Thank you, by the way. Great interview. They invested in their own PCB fab, one of the cleanest, certainly the cleanest in the country, potentially the world, they say. So this was, I think, $100 million is what they ended up investing there.
Yeah, I think Moscow, Idaho is the location of that new site. And you know, because of new technologies and because of automation, you know, PCB facilities, substrate facilities are cleaner and leaner than they've ever been before. And I think it is the kind of facility that any member of Congress should want in their district, right? It's high-tech manufacturing. It's jobs that are there for careers, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a mix of different skill sets and different backgrounds. And it also contributes to everything that makes modern life possible. So there's a lot of wins for having this kind of manufacturing in your region of the country. And, you know, we want to see that expanded. I think lawmakers, I think policymakers want to see that expanded.
And even from just a jobs perspective, you know, I recently was listening to, was it Elon Musk talking about when he built down in Austin, that brought in 10,000 jobs, he said, but it also added about 50,000 support jobs to the area, right? So it's just not the factory, it's everything in support of that. And so as we talk about that microelectronics ecosystem, right, it's not just the board, it's everything else associated that's going to be coming. So
yeah, all kinds of ancillary benefits. And as these gigantic semiconductor fabs come online in places like Ohio and Arizona, you've already heard Secretary Raimondo talk about manufacturing nodes. I think she's talking about ecosystems. She's talking about collections up and down the value stream of microelectronics manufacturers who support those companies. And I think it makes sense. Why build a semiconductor, ship it halfway around the world for its advanced packaging, for its integrated circuit substrate, for its printed circuit board, and then eventually to be assembled and given to an OEM? Why do all of that going back and forth across the Pacific? I don't think it makes sense. I don't think it's what the CHIPS Act is designed to achieve. So that's our educate, advocate, legislate mission. Teach more people about our place in the ecosystem and show them where their next actions need to be.
Before we shift to next year, let me just ask you again, because you just mentioned Secretary Raimondo there, the bipartisan political support that you've been receiving is noteworthy, I think, right? In this time when a lot of people look at Congress and see a lot of dysfunction and disunity, I think there are examples here of you have people from both sides of the aisle and you've been working very closely with. Maybe say a few words about that, please.
Yeah, we're a strictly bipartisan organization focused on outcomes. And our mission, I don't think, falls on one side of the aisle or another. We've always had bipartisan support for our legislation. And when I go to Washington and I walk the halls of Congress, both Republicans and Democrats alike understand the national security implications. They understand the supply chain resilience issues. And they certainly want to see more jobs in their home states and home districts. And so I can't think of an overt political reason why you would be opposed to our efforts. There are concerns about spending that we're very willing to discuss. There are concerns about the government's role in markets that we're willing to discuss. A lot of people are focused on their particular issue. Maybe it's a national security issue. Maybe it's a jobs issue. Maybe it's a deficit issue. I think we can speak to all of those. And the best storytellers are our members. I love taking the leaders of our organizations, folks running these companies, to Washington, because they can tell the story of what's happened to the industry over the last 30 years, and they can speak to the end use of a lot of these technologies. You know, when you tell a senator, we don't ship Javelin missiles, without printed circuit boards. We don't turn on EV chargers without printed circuit boards. That starts to resonate very, very quickly. Yeah. Those messages really start to hit home. And our members are great storytellers about what it is they do.
Good, 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 good. So it's been a busy, productive year, but lots to be done still, right? So what's on the agenda in 2024?
Well, I'm glad you asked. You know, it's an election year. And of course, that's going to be a significant distraction, but it's also a great year to focus the attention of lawmakers who are going to be running for re-election. Jobs are always paramount. National security is always paramount. Buttressing local economies is always paramount in an election year. And we have issues that I think speak to all of those concerns. I do think that we're going to look very closely at getting a Senate companion bill introduced. H.R. 3249, the PCBs Act, has been introduced in the House and continues to pick up bipartisan co-sponsorship. We need a Senate companion. The legislative process, simply requires that. I also mentioned that we are going to try and push the Congress to give more money to the DPA account so that the Pentagon can spend more on innovative microelectronics technologies. Of course, we are going to continue to push the NDAA. I think we need to have an expanded conversation now about raw materials, right? Woven glass, copper, some of the raw elements. Many of our members are represented in that particular concern. And the more we learn about the single points of failure and the fragility of the raw materials supply chain, the more work we have to do in Washington on that front. And of course, we'll be back in June for our 2024 annual meeting. We'll be walking the halls with dozens of members telling our stories. And we've got to continue to grow. As happy as I am to be near 50 members less than 3 years after we started, I know that there are hundreds of companies out there that should be on our team, because what happens in Washington happens to them. You know, we sometimes say that in DC, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. This is not a sport where we can stand on the sidelines, right? I'm exhausting my metaphors here, but the point is people can't sit and watch us do these briefings, have these discussions, litigate these issues. It hits the bottom line of so many of your listeners to the tune of millions or billions of dollars. So a big part of our focus next year is to get bigger, expand our political footprint, expand the diversity of our membership. I'd love to come back with you next year and say that it's 150, not 50. And we need to get bigger before we can have more of a political impact. Those are the rules of Washington.
Okay. And just for the benefit of those people who are watching, membership involves what? If somebody joins?
It's really easy. We have a variety of corporate and individual membership. Various membership levels tied to benefits and your role in the ecosystem. And any of your listeners can talk to myself. We've got a new membership director on board. She's doing a tremendous job. And I talk to, you know, probably a dozen companies every week about what it is that we're doing. Thanks to your show and a variety of outlets, the word is getting out about our activities. And we're young, we're new. I understand that we've got an educational hurdle of our own to clear. But when we sit down and explain to people what it is we're doing, I think we occupy a unique role. People see the value and they want to have someone fighting for them in DC. So I'm eager to talk to anybody who's interested in what we're doing.
So you've heard him, folks. So reach out. I think I'm big supporter of this. I think it's a great mission that you guys have launched. And, hopefully we can help drum up some more by through our platform as well.
We appreciate it.
By the way, I did appreciate your reminding about the election coming up this next year. And of course, what came into mind immediately was Ronald Reagan's referring to it as the silly season, right? So
it can be a significant distraction, but we're going to push forward. The business of our members is ever present, and there will be members of Congress who want to get things done. That probably will be more in the first and second quarter than the third and fourth as members go back to their districts to run for re-election. But I think it focuses the mind, again, for a lot of lawmakers, because it's about jobs. It's about contributions inside their district. It's about issues that voters care about. Where do we get the things that run the modern world? Who do we depend on for the technologies that make our lives possible? I think that's a great issue to vote on and think about and evaluate candidates against. And so it's timely, even in an election year, especially in an election year.
No, especially, and the one you didn't mention, but is right there, is the national security, of course, is
absolutely
is a bipartisan issue and needs to be such. So, David, thank you for your efforts. Thank you for doing these updates regularly with me. I know the audience appreciates it. We appreciate your work that you're doing and running around Washington. I know it's the beginning of December, so we're heading into the holiday seasons. Things slow up a bit. So I wish you and your family happy holidays. Best wishes for the new year, and glad to be staying connected and getting caught up next year with you again.
To you and yours as well. The conversation and the work are ongoing. We appreciate everything you do to spread the word, and hope you have a great holiday season. We'll reminisce about it in the new year.
There we go. Thank you, sir. Take care.
Thank you.